You're listening to The Daily Traditionalist with Matthew Heidmark at RadioArian.com.
Hello, comrades. This is your host of The Daily Traditionalist, Matthew Heimbach, and I'm here today joined by a special guest who had joined us for a little bit yesterday to discuss her ongoing case. As many of you probably know, especially for our listeners that are in the UK, Alison Chablow has been one of the targets of essentially George Orwell's 1984, the idea of thought criminals. I was reading just today this discussion. Breitbart London was talking about that hate crimes must be driven by hostility. And they contacted a bunch of UK police forces saying, what does that mean? What does hostility mean? And it can include, they say, unfriendliness. So if you possibly are just unfriendly with someone in the UK, you might be committing a hate crime. I mean, this is the insanity that is happening in the United Kingdom against anyone that disagrees with any of the policies of the radical left that is now dominating not only the Labour Party, but the Tories. I mean, this is political correctness run amok, specifically trying to demonize and attack real nationalists and just normal people. I mean, the attacks on veterans that have flown the St. George's flag outside of their home, being told they can't do that because it makes Muslim invaders unwelcome and not happy about it. I mean, this is what we're dealing with. So Alison is here today to tell us kind of basically about her entire case. So Alison, first of all, how are you doing today? And second of all, give our listeners just a little bit of an introduction to who you are.
Hi, Matt. Thanks again for inviting me on. I was born in the northwest of England near Manchester, grew up there, had a traditional upbringing, went to church, all that, Sunday school. I left the UK in 1987, after I'd completed my first studies, which were in French, in fact. I lived in Spain for a year, and then I eventually ended up in Switzerland, where I did another degree in music. And I was, in fact, a music teacher in Swiss schools, both state schools and private schools, for about 12 years. I also had a family. I was married to a Swiss man, hence my rather strange surname. And I also worked sometimes as a journalist. I would write for English-speaking Swiss websites and little newspapers, local news. I wasn't really that much invested in global politics at that time. That began, I would say, in about 2011. My daughter had left home, grown up, all that. I knew I wanted to come back to my roots. In fact, around that time, I'd been spending quite a lot of time in Egypt, and that kind of turned me onto the Israeli question, the Israeli-Palestine conflict. And you perhaps remember the Occupy movement back then, the 99%, the Occupy. So I did become politically involved. And that was around the first time that I heard anybody speaking of revisionist theories. At first, I was incredulous, but I studied and learned. And because I can speak good French, I became familiar with the works of Robert Faurisson, great French revisionist, French Scottish revisionist, in fact. And I started to tweet and started to write about these issues. I was very shocked at the way revisionists and associated fellow dissidents were being persecuted in European countries by these so-called anti-revisionist laws, or as the Zionists prefer to say, Holocaust denial laws, making us all sound extremely evil. And so I started to campaign to inform people about these issues. And that, of course, in turn made me a target of the Israeli lobby. I was sacked from one job. I'd left teaching by then, and I was doing the cruise circuits. I worked on cruise ships as a musician. I've got a large repertoire. I can play the piano and the guitar and sing. I worked for one German cruise company. I was sacked on the evidence of one anti-Israel tweet. I was a member of the union, but they didn't help me. And this persecution, in this case by a Zionist woman who lives in London, swore an oath of allegiance to Jews in Israel, but not to the country where she was born. This led to her targeting me in 2015 when I was appearing at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. And I'd already talked to the organisers of this show that I was doing, a full run of shows throughout the month of August at the Edinburgh Festival. It's the biggest arts festival in the world. All arts are represented there. And around the main festival is this fringe festival that began, I think, in the late 40s. And it's become a place for radical artists to perform their work, to get noticed, etc. I'd already been there in previous years. But on that occasion, I told the organizers, I said, yes, they're calling me an anti-Semite. They're calling me a Holocaust denier. Are you sure you want to be associated with me? They said, yes, yes, the Edinburgh Fringe, free speech and all that. But this guy informed me later that quite a few people had written to the Fringe Society trying to get my show banned. So when I heard that, I thought I must react. And I went onto the main street in Edinburgh. It's called Princes Street. It was a lovely evening. And I performed a Quesnel salute outside Edinburgh Castle. And I just posted the photograph on Twitter. And this led to headlines in the Times of Israel that British police confirm complaint against artist Quesnel salute, gas chambers, blah, 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 blah. So that was the first time I rocketed to infamy, let's say. And since then, I've been the target of this campaign against anti-Semitism, a Jewish charity that was set up in 2014 during the last Gaza war. And they are a registered charity, bizarrely, but they are clearly a Zionist operation with immense influence. The chairman, Gideon Falter, who originally brought a private prosecution against me for my songs, I'll come back to that in a bit, he had a private meeting with Theresa May, who was at the time the Home Secretary. She's now, of course, our Prime Minister. There are photos floating about on their websites, etc., with this man Falter and his second-in-command, another man, Stephen Silverman, in the company of top police officers in the UK. And in fact, this private prosecution was brought against me.
I just wanted to throw in real quick, of course, for our listeners who remember, Theresa May, you know, the Home Secretary at the time, had the joy of banning me from the entirety of the United Kingdom. Even though, of course, that's, I'm obviously German on my father's side, but on my mother's side, I'm Irish and English. So I was actually banned from the land of my forefathers for the crime of criticizing Israel and homosexuality and things like that. And of course, I'd never been convicted of a crime. I had never encouraged violence of any kind, but I was banned from the UK. So it seems like Miss May had a lot of time in her schedule to try and focus on people who went against the Zionist agenda, not so much keeping out actual terrorists, but going against folks like us. Sorry, I just wanted to interject that. I always think it's funny when I hear her mention all the things that she likes to do.
we remember, I'm sure your listeners will remember also, after the Charlie Hebdo attacks, that was in January 2015, Theresa May sat in a conference hall with a big poster saying, "Je suis juif," I am a Jew. So that tends to get tend to be reminded of that quite often, especially with her government adopt, that's the word they use, this international definition of anti-Semitism, which is legally meaningless in the UK. We don't have this kind of legislation. But yes, Theresa May and the new Home Secretary is no better, Amber Rudd. I think we can all agree on that as well. But yes, that's where I am today. Yesterday was the seventh hearing. In fact, I began to write songs about like any artist, I react to what's happening around me in the world. And I'd already written the lyrics to one song, which is now the subject of charges. Three of my songs are subject to charges under the Malicious Communications Act. They claim, or the Crown, because now Bolter's private prosecution has been taken over by the Crown Prosecution Service, who is trying to have me convicted for sending or causing to be sent a grossly offensive message. And that would be, in my case, three of my satirical songs, which talk about the Holocaust and talk about Jewish influence and power. Yes, yesterday was the sixth hearing. It all began last December. I was originally granted unconditional bail. A week later, I was dragged back across Britain, where I was gagged by a now recused pro-Israel judge. And a third judge is now presiding. And yesterday, it was quite a successful hearing, I would say. My barrister, Adrian Davis, was absolutely brilliant. The Crown's key witnesses, who are these two men, Gideon Falter and Stephen Silverman, had made a request. We heard about this at the beginning of the hearing yesterday, to be present in court, but neither of them turned up. We don't know why. Perhaps it's something to do with Derbyshire Police finally returning my laptop to me after a year and me having all this evidence admitted by their own legal team, in fact, at the second bail hearing last year, that they use anonymous Twitter troll accounts to try and bait and entrap people into saying things that they might later regret. And in my case, yes, there may be a few things where I was, wound up. But these songs, the fact that they are targeting a musician, an artist, it would set a very dangerous precedent under this act, because in fact I didn't send these messages to an individual. All I did was share a YouTube link on my blog. So how can that be construed as sending or causing to be sent a message, seeing as these messages were just available for people to find on the internet, to make a search and find? But my accusers, whose business it is to seek out anti-Semitism and then ask money from the government, from donations, etc., sought out my blog, they sought out the videos concerned, and then made a huge fuss with the police and with the Crown, etc., to try and bring a precedent which will effectively, if I'm found guilty, then there will be a precedent which will effectively outlaw any criticism of organised Jewry and the Holocaust, the so-called Holocaust. It's still under legal argument. That the judge said yesterday he would make a decision in writing. He would give that decision. He's also scheduled another hearing for the 30th of November, the 20th of November, sorry. That's when his decision will be made public on the points of law. That's the legal arguments concerning this sending or causing to be sent. Can we say that a URL is in fact a grossly offensive message? So it is complex. Who knows which way he will decide? Whichever way he does decide, and either team can appeal. So at the moment, he's stating that we're going to keep the trial date, which is next January the 10th, and therefore that the case can also be heard not only on these points of law, but also on the facts stated, which namely is the content of my songs and whether the content of these songs is in fact grossly offensive.
So bring up in terms of a legal precedent is so important, because they're really pushing this agenda across the entire Western world, especially here in the Anglosphere. I mean, you know, we're facing here in the United States a series of laws about individuals and things like that, where really the crux of what they're saying is holding a legal march that we did in Charlottesville, that our right was originally banned, but it was that decision was reversed by a federal judge. We had every right to march and hold our event. We were attacked by hordes of communists that were allowed, that while the police stood by. And then we're the ones being blamed as we were trying to exercise what is under the United States Constitution, but also under Anglo-Saxon common law, the right to politically protest and the right to politically speak. I mean, these are rights that go back hundreds of years in the Anglosphere. Yes. But as we can see in Canada, you know, many of the rights have been stripped away. In Australia, they're going after them. In South Africa, if you even say some words that might have been common during the apartheid era, then they can throw you in prison. So, I mean, this really seems, you know, the precedent they're trying to push on us here in the United States, just to give context for my American listeners, they're essentially saying that because there were Jews there, actually they had a scroll from Europe during World War II, and they thought they had to hide it. I guess they're actually saying in court documents that they feared we were going to charge into their synagogue and take their take their scrolls. I mean, like crazy stuff that would absolutely never happen, absolutely did not happen. But they were, quote unquote, intimidated or, quote unquote, fearful and offended. And they're trying to push this legal precedent on us, which effectively would make it impossible, really, for organizations, for nationalist organizations to criticize, our opponents, the ones who are trying to displace us and attack our culture, or to hold public events. And they're doing this everywhere. And, you know, the reason I bring that up is I think it's very interesting that in every single Anglosphere country is people are becoming more aware. I mean, especially through the internet, where we have the ability to get information outside of the channels of the government schools and the official, basically government propaganda, whether they're private or public. I mean, it's the same government propaganda. Is we can investigate the truth for ourselves. We see that more and more people are turning against the policies of the Western governments that they've been pushing for so long, that now we have a platform to discuss ideas, to debate ideas, and to search for the truth. So it seems like they're cracking down everywhere in the Anglosphere against everyone. I mean, from us, you know, over here as a political party, the things they've done to nationalists in other countries. But to you, as someone who is not only a musician, but doing satire. And it's so important to understand in our culture, I mean, the idea of satire, the idea of being able to make jokes, to poke fun. I mean, you can go back in history, even the court jester was the one who could actually mock the king to his face, as a way where he was actually immune from any sort of punishment. But it was a way to kind of satirize and critique decisions, to maybe make the king think and, to kind of enter ideas in. And I mean, the idea of going after someone for satirical music, that goes against not only, I believe, the law as it stood, at least for the past several centuries, but our tradition as those of us in the Anglosphere of being able to criticize those that are in power and the policies that they're promoting. I mean, they are trying to shut down all dissent because I think they know the majority of people do not agree. I mean, if you look at the Brexit vote, if you look at the election of Donald Trump, well, Donald Trump is not one of us. He did enter in a lot of nationalist ideas of America not no longer being an empire, of America first, things like that, imposing illegal immigration, stopping refugee resettlement. And the people voted for that. And now, of course, you've got radical leftists on the streets saying your vote was a hate crime. They're trying to silence anyone who disagrees with their agenda. So maybe would you like to speak a little bit about the tradition? Because obviously, you know, as a teacher and all the traveling you've done, you live a lot of different places. How, you know, really English tradition is under attack here, because if you're not allowed to do satire, if you're not allowed to create art, which music is art, then they're effectively saying that you can't be creative. You can't find any really avenue to criticize those in power. They're trying to silence not just you, but the millions of other British people that think just like you. I mean, that's what it comes down to. They're trying to stop all sorts of dissent. So maybe you could speak on that in a little bit.
Of course, we have a long, well-established tradition, not only in the UK, but also in Europe, all European culture of satire. And that, in fact, in a way, it was this satirical targeting of our institutions. The church, you know, the Catholic Church was a big target for satirical cartoons in the 19th and early 20th centuries, I would say. And in a way, that kind of went some way to not destroying our religion, but for exposing the corruption within and the double standards within, you know, these so-called moralizing institutions. We must do that. I told the police that me, and they're doing it via bullying, you know. And I think another quick point here is that if they do succeed here in the UK, the next step will certainly be the First Amendment. But we have this common law foundation to our civilization, unlike the other countries. That's why they've been able, they have a civil law basis there. They have been able to install these anti-revisionist laws. I think the other thing about my music is that it's kind of like cabaret, old style music hall, which was very Jewish thing. You know? So they really don't like the fact that somebody is using a form of art that was made popular not only by Jews, but principally by Jews in the 20s and 30s to expose the crimes, the inconsistencies, the ridiculous lies of people like Irene Zisblatt, etc. So they really don't like that. I say in YouTube now, I have over 50 videos spanning back 10 years. And most of these videos aren't revisionist in any sense of the word. There's a handful of songs that are revisionist. There are a couple of political videos where I talk about the issues around facing me. But all of my videos, all of them, every single one has been banned by YouTube in the countries which have Holocaust denial laws. Everyone, even I've got little gardening videos or videos of a street parade when I lived in Switzerland. Every one of my videos has been banned by YouTube. Everyone. And I can upload anything.
Even gardening.
three days later, I will get a message. And at the end of that list of 18 countries, they've now added also the UK. So as well as trying to silence people, they will try and execute you socially and professionally by taking away your means of making a living. But like you say, the internet, this reminds me also of the outcome of the second Ernst Zündel trial, in fact, when Zündel, rest his soul, recently deceased, when he was finally found guilty of whatever charge it was, incitement to spreading false news, that was in 1988, and he was put in solitary confinement for 2 years in Canada before being transferred to Germany, where he spent another goodness knows how long in jail. Faurisson at that time was worried as well. That's it. You know, we can pretty much, you know, it's finished. Revisionism is finished. But the Americans said, no, now we have the internet. That is what will help spread the word of revisionism. So it's taken 20 to 25 years for these ideas to get more traction. And I think more and more people are becoming aware of these ideas. Even my parents, you know, who grew up after the war years, etc., they now start to realize that so many people are coming to the facts because, like you say, we have the internet. And when the opposition is bullying somebody who's creating music, that's, you know, you can see all the comments on my videos, most of them largely positive. I make people laugh. There's nothing malicious. There's nothing inciting people to go out and kill anybody or commit a terrorist attacks. They are clearly exposing the ridiculous lies of diamond swallower Irene Zisblatt and the fact that Elie Wiesel, in Elie Wiesel's first autobiography, there was no mention whatsoever of any gas chambers, and the controversy surrounding the Anne Frank diary, which is now co-authored by her father. The mainstream, of course, very, very quiet about all these issues. The mainstream have also been very quiet about this case. And one would think that it's a newsworthy item, especially 3 weeks ago when at the last hearing I was arrested and dragged away, put in handcuffs, put in a police dog van and driven 3 hours up the motorway. one would think that the mainstream would is there to inform the public. Clearly they are not. But that's why people like you are here, Matt and Sven. Thanks very much for organising this. That's why we need people like you. And I think the mainstream, most people realise that, you know, they just lie. That's it.
Well, I think you're 100% correct. I mean, and you just look, you know, Ingrid Zundel, unfortunately, I was informed yesterday, passed away as well. And I had the joy of meeting her. And actually, I was given one of her husband's paintings that he painted in jail that hangs in my home. And you think about the struggle that's gone on for so long just for truth. I mean, the idea of questioning a historical event and putting forth evidence. And I mean, that's what history, much like science, is supposed to be, that you put forward a theory, you present your evidence, and you've got to be open to critique. You've got to be open to other evidence. I mean, that's how you know, develop a scientific theory. Same way with understanding history. And the way that they've made the idea of criticism illegal. I mean, you only make something illegal to talk about if you're afraid of where those questions might lead. I mean, that's what it comes down to. They are fundamentally afraid because every one of their policies, whether it comes to the restriction, the banning of nationalist parties in Europe, the social isolation that we're put into, the moral justification of Western European governments in World War II and the actions that they did, firebombing children in Dresden, you know, using nuclear weapons against Hiroshima and Nagasaki of my own country. I mean, all these things is built upon the foundation, the justification of the Holocaust. And if the Holocaust is in any way, shape, or form questioned, then that utterly redefines the political landscape then of understanding not only that time, but the policies today. I mean, I've seen Germans, you know, saying like, we must accept all these refugees. Now over 20% of the German population has been foreign born. They must accept the refugees because of the Holocaust. Well, if the Holocaust didn't happen as it was presented, well, then that challenges the entirety of post-war German politics. I mean, literally, it calls into question everything. And we would really have to look inside ourselves and redefine a lot of elements about what is commonly accepted. And that's why revisionism is so dangerous to the system, because everything, I mean, it really is. And maybe because we got a few minutes left that you could speak on the fact that like the cornerstone, like it's just like, I don't know if in the UK you've got the game Jenga, but you've got the blocks you build up together and you try and pull the blocks out. That really the block that will cause the tower to fall over is revisionism, because every justification just falls apart for all these genocidal policies that are being put forward if the Holocaust didn't happen as it was presented, if it turns out it was a hoax. So maybe you could talk on that about really how this issue, because people might say, oh, well, it was 70 years ago, it doesn't really matter now. I mean, but it's so crucial. It's so important. It's so fundamental to the Zionist agenda that's being pushed in the West. It really is the one thing that must be gone after, because it justifies in their mind and to many of the public all their actions that they do is built on that one lie.
Yes, indeed. I was speaking to one of the French identitarian, well-known gentleman called Yvan Benedetti. He runs also a banned organization called Jeune Nation in France, and he agrees. You know, so totally on our side that the Holocaust. The issue of the Holocaust is at the heart of our struggle. That's why other organizations, I call them kosher nationalists, you know, like the English Defense League or even the BNP now, and Britain First, etc. They are given a form of media coverage. It might not be positive, but they are given a form of media coverage, you know, all publicity, they say. But yes, the Holocaust has a number of function, one of which is the foundation and continuation of the genocidal state of Israel, which we'll all know that they don't have orders, do they? And they're allowed to get away with these race laws. Palestinians don't have the same race laws as the vast majority of Khazar, Ashkenazi of Eastern European descent Jews who live in the country. So yes, diversity for the many, not for the Jew, it seems, is the essence of the day in Israel. And of course, everybody knows that these lobbying organizations. And so all you need to control a democracy is a very wealthy, very influential lobbying organization, and you infiltrate all sides of the debate. It's the same with AIPAC in the United States. You have the Democrats, the Republicans. AIPAC has a huge influence over this, and it all goes further into the deep state and the secret government and all this. And it's the same in England with the Labour Friends of Israel, with the Conservative Friends of Israel. Coming back to the press coverage, there's a short court news report, but you need to be a subscriber to read what they said about that, about my case yesterday, was the Jewish Chronicle. 4 months ago at the hearing in June, the judge said, it's contempt of court if you publish Ms. Shablo's address. But they've gone ahead and done it. They don't care. They really don't care. They have more money. They are so arrogant in their chosenness and belief that they are... You can't deny it. This is what I was also saying to the policeman. You cannot deny it. If the Jewish lobby have proof that they don't run the media, they don't have this influence in government, etc., then they should come on the table and prove it. There was an article 2 days ago showing that 27% of the top people in the BBC are Jews. We're supposed to have equal opportunities here in the UK. The Jews are responsible, the Board of Deputies of British Jews, responsible for pushing these laws, these equality laws. But it seems that some are still more equal than others. And democracy, the right, like you say, Matt, the right to debate, open, honourable and loyal debate is the cornerstone of our Western democracies. And that, if we lose that, then we're just living in an ever increasing tyranny. Yes, the Holocaust is the issue. We must have an open debate. In fact, the exterminationists, those who screech anti-Semitism at every opportunity, they lost the debate already when they refused to enter into debate and created these laws in France, Germany, Switzerland, etc. The debate was already lost then. They will keep trying here. That's their method. They never learn. Never again, they say, but they never learn. They managed to pass the law in France with an attack on a Jewish cemetery that was desecrated. That's when the politicians all raised their arms and said, oh yes, we need a law, etc. They will keep trying. Perhaps something like that will happen in the UK, hopefully with CCTV and advanced technology. That will be a remote possibility. But they will keep on trying to pass a precedent that will basically outlaw discussion. They need this. That there's no proof, of course. There's no proof. There's never been any photograph or drawing or architect's plan of any of these alleged homicidal gas chambers. There are very few living survivors left. So they just need, anti-Semitism is accusations, allegations of anti-Semitism in quotes, is their only weapon left. That's all they've got left to try and preserve the myth.
Well, and Allison, I just wanted to say, as we're coming to the end of the show here, first of all, I want people to be able to get to your website. So it's spelled alisonchablos.wordpress.com. I want everyone to stay in touch with you. And Allison, you are so correct. You are absolutely on the money with everything. You are a voice for our people that needs to be out there. I think even more than you already are. And I just wanted to appreciate, I apologize about the time constraints, but I would love to have you on again. I want every one of my listeners to be able to support you in this time, to be praying for you, to be spreading your videos. And because, I mean, this is all the enemy has left, the last weapon that they have. And of course, you know, these, as you pointed out earlier, these are the genocidal maniacs that are claiming anti-Semitism against us, as they're the ones dropping white phosphorus on Palestinian children and denying basic medical access to children and the elderly in Palestine. I mean, our enemies are the genocidal ones. We're the ones that want to be able to have our own nation. So Allison, thank you so much for being here. It was such a pleasure. Stay strong in this struggle. And thank you to all my listeners. I'm going to be back on Monday. I'm going to be traveling tomorrow for our event in Shelbyville, Tennessee. I hope to see a lot of you there. And we'll look forward after the weekend to another week of the Daily Traditionalist. So Allison, thank you so much. And everyone, hail victory.
You've been listening to the Daily Traditionalist on